It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
All right, let's talk legal. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Lockwood.
Good morning.
All right, what's on tap today? Estates and estate planning?
Let's talk about the basics of estate planning. Today, it's been a while since we've talked about some of those basic documents that all of us need and why we need them and what their purposes are. Let's talk about that today, Lockwood.
You know, it's interesting in light of the fact that we're midway into the year,
yes,
which is really kind of surprising, June. This is that kind of year when, because we're coming around to the end of the year, and by now you've got to start thinking about how you're establishing all your tax records and what you're doing. And it seems to me this is the kind of time of year when you want to start thinking about, okay, have we got our estate in proper order as we prepare for, I know, granted, it's only mid-year.
Right.
But
there is somewhat of a cycle every year, isn't there?
It is. IRS makes sure to it.
Right.
I think, Lockwood, that what our listeners, might not realize is that it's just so important to gather up what you have, and have it reviewed by a good lawyer, in the area of estate planning, a lawyer who does wills and powers of attorney and trust and knows about those things.
And December 18th is not a good time to be trying to do that.
No, it isn't. But what I'm getting at here is that there's so many outside factors that influence your good documentation. We've talked about here on the program, you know, how your accounts are titled, who your beneficiaries happen to be of your IRAs, annuities, things of that nature, how your real property is titled. Is it titled just in your name or in the name of yourself and your spouse or you and your business partner? What is the case there? And the reason I bring this up on the front end is that, you know, estate planning is more than just the documentation. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of those things that I just mentioned are changing. You know, we change our banking relationship, or we change our account, our investment relationship. We buy and sell property. We have changes in our family. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what you see when you get out that document from 5-7 years ago and you realize maybe how circumstances have changed a bit. Maybe your alternate executor is, you know, no longer living. Okay.
Right.
So Wes and I began the program today with just encouraging folks to gather their documents, and seek counsel and sit down for an hour. Maybe everything is okay. And if it is, then just great. But it's so important to be proactive in this area.
You've got several things working though. You've got, valuation changes.
Yes.
Right.
Then you have, law changes, how IRS treats certain things, and with, as we know, Congress can't leave anything alone for longer than maybe 18 months maximum, if you're
right.
lucky.
Right.
So you're looking at such a variable environment.
Well, the law lives and breathes. It moves, it changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, attorneys who practice in this area, really any area, they have to keep up with the changes of the law, in the law. And you're right, you know, Lockwood, when we're talking about estate planning, you know, estate planning documentation, basics of estate planning, you know, you can't have that discussion without having an understanding of how the tax laws affect you and how your documents deal with the tax issues, how you deal with, say, real estate that you own in another state and what's going to happen to that in the event of your death. How is that going to pass? How is the state of, you know, Maine going to know that you passed away in North Carolina? You know, there's it's just so broad as far as the different issues that we deal with and we see on a very consistent basis dealing with different people's estates. And, you know, that experience helps us to see potential problems so that we can deal with those in the documents and the plan that we're putting together for folks, as opposed to, being reactive with regard to there being a problem because we didn't address it up front or the client didn't seek competent legal counsel up front.
Well, and I just want to make mention, you actually allude to this on the mobility of the marketplace and folks. You mentioned Maine, New York, sure. Ohio. They move here. They're in perfectly good health.
Right.
Everything's fine. And they don't think about it. But they've had their will drawn up for the state of Ohio.
Absolutely. And in the boilerplate provisions and the powers of the fiduciary, the executor, there's going to be a reference to the Ohio statute.
Right.
And you don't want to have a North Carolina estate proceeding here in one of our great counties, Carteret, Craven, Pamlico, Onslow County, or anywhere in our state, and have, you know, Ohio statutes in the document.
By the way, we're not trashing Ohio.
No, we're not trashing Ohio.
If it were Nebraska or Indiana.
Or any other state.
No.
But it's just that it is absolutely true. It's a fundamental thing to discuss, Lockwood, that estates are governed by the law in the state where the decedent lived and where his residency was. And so his documents or her documents need to be in conformity with that state.
And what's the definition for residency?
Well, that's a good one. Residency is two elements. Mm-hmm. Number one is where you happen to be, where you are physically located.
Okay.
Where you lay your head at night. Uh-huh. But here comes the interesting one, which is the one we like because we get to play with it a lot, which is what is your intention? What is your intention? How do you like that, Lockwood?
But if I've been living here for a year.
Right. That does not mean you're a resident.
Okay.
Because you may not have had the intention for North Carolina to be your residency.
Right.
There are elements of intention. You know, where's your driver's license? Where are you paying, of course, where are you paying your
taxes.
Income taxes? Certain states, such as Florida, that have very favorable, income tax laws have certain very specific requirements as to be a resident of that state and take advantage of the lower income tax or no income tax. But residency is definitely a gray area. Okay, in terms of just, you know, that intention keeps it very fluid, that element.
Who makes that determination? Does the court make that determination, or could it be challenged in court? How is that determined?
Well, I have so much practical experience with that issue. A lot of times, Lockwood, it's how you're guided, I have to say. I mean, I just don't know how else to answer the question to say there are a lot of times where I will guide clients toward being a North Carolina resident or guide them away from North Carolina residency for some reason. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of flexibility in that.
Can I?
When it comes up, I mean, like for instance, me, for example, I mean, gosh, I was born in Morehead City. I'm pretty much a North Carolina resident. I think you are too, Lockwood.
Yeah,
you know, so there's no question with the greatest majority of people. But certainly, like, for instance, mothers and fathers of folks my age living in a different state.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes a time when, you know, I mean, we have so many situations like this in our office where, you know, I just can't take care of mom in New Jersey, you know, or Ohio or Philadelphia. I've got to bring my mom here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come here. And then they're here for a few months, and then maybe something happens, okay? They don't make it. The question is, well, are they a resident of, you know, Philadelphia, or are they in Pennsylvania, or are they a resident of North Carolina? And so we have to talk about that.
Associated with that, I'm thinking about long-term care situations, a good example of that. And your family has relocated here, if we're under the guise of temporary. But obviously the children are looking at the parents. They've also got to guide, it seems to me, the parents through the process of working with their wills and estates as well, because that will influence what these children are able to do or afford if in the case of long-term care or we're all mortal.
Well, in order to qualify for Medicaid benefits in the state of North Carolina, there's a 6-month residency.
Correct. Yeah. Right.
But again, you can see where we would, people always think we lawyers are tricky. I'm sorry. But you know, think about it for a minute. I mean, you know, what is that? That's a hard deadline. 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But when did the intention begin?
Gotcha.
Okay. Did it begin the day you got here, or did you become a resident really of North Carolina even though you were still living in Ohio? Okay, because you were intending to move to North Carolina. You had already bought a property here. Okay, you haven't sold the property in Ohio and quite moved here. But when you registered your car here, when you registered to vote, when you got a post office box here in North Carolina, even though you're not necessarily living here every single night, mm-hmm. you know, that could potentially, you know, qualify for residency. Residency is a bit loose.
Okay? I would say to go back to answer your question with regard to that residency being challenged. I would say it's very rare for that to be challenged in state administration context. It would be more common for that to be challenged in a Medicaid application context.
Okay.
They're going to be asking for certain documentation. Some of the things that Cecil just mentioned, certain information with regard to, you know, when did you actually move to North Carolina, so on and so forth. If you lived in another state, then there may be a period of time before you would be eligible in this state.
All right. We're talking wills and estates with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on Viewpoint. I did it on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240, 7:45 in the morning. And by the way, if you have a question about this, you're welcome to join us, but call in 800-818-2255, locally in the 910 area code 353-4674. That's 353-4674 and 252 area code 247-7282. 247-7282. I was just interested in the issue of establishing residency in preparation for, of course, administrating wills and estates. Stay tuned for more.
So
talking, Let's Talk Legal.
We are.
Good morning, Cecil, and
right.
West Collins. Yes, sir.
But Lockwood, just very quickly, and then we'll go into a last little thing here. I mean, we said we're going to talk about the fundamentals of estate planning, mm-hmm. and right. we will continue this next week and maybe even the following week. But clearly, our listeners know that what we're talking about is a last will and testament,
mm-hmm.
a durable power of attorney,
right.
a health care power of attorney, or sometimes known as a health care proxy. There is also now a HIPAA release, which we should discuss at some point. And lastly, a living will or declaration of desire for natural death. So Wes and I get the call every day. Gosh, you know, Cecil, I want to come in there and get a will. And of course, they come in and they come in for their will,
uh-huh.
but they usually go out the door with those five documents. And they are, again, a will, a durable power of attorney, a health care proxy, a declaration of desire for natural death, and a HIPAA release, okay? Each of these are worthy of explanation. Now, when I rattle off five documents like that, all the listeners are thinking, oh my gosh, how expensive. You know, Lockwood, this is not terribly expensive. Mm-hmm. This can be very simple in many, many files, a few $100s,
mm-hmm.
and you can have all of those documents, which, of course, can save thousands and thousands of dollars and years of delay if you don't have them. Now, certainly there are other files where the documents become more complicated, and that leads into what we were talking about during the break, which is the trust word, the T word, if we need a trust. And if you need a trust, then certainly first of all needs to be some real validity to why we need a trust. What is the purpose of the trust? Just to create one, just to say we have it, is kind of like, you know, oh, we have a caller.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Right.
Well, let's have a caller.
They always come first. All right. Let's go to Bob in Moorhead City. Bob,
hey,
good morning.
Bob.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. I'm a resident of North Carolina. What if I own property outside of the state? Do I need a will in that state?
There you go.
If I have property outside of the country, do I need a will in that country?
That is a great question.
I'll hang up and listen to you.
Right. Okay,
thanks, Bob.
Appreciate it. Yeah, basically, you're going to have just one will. I mean, there's no really such thing as having multiple wills for different states. You're going to have one will. But in the event that you're you're a resident of North Carolina and your estate is being administered here after you pass away, then, you know, obviously these other states, other countries, they're going to have to be put on notice that you died and what your will says and those kind of things. Well, a very efficient way to deal with that and to not entangle the administration of your estate in North Carolina with the other states or other countries is to set up a trust and to convey title to the property, to the trust, so that immediately upon your passing, that property passes under the terms of the trust without us having to hire legal counsel to set up what's called an ancillary estate administration in this other country, which would be a real headache, and in another state, which is a little bit lesser of a headache, but still a headache. So that is prudent estate planning. If you own property in another state, to go ahead and set that up in a non-probate form, so that we don't have to open that ancillary estate administration. It just passes under the terms of the trust immediately pursuant to your wishes upon your death.
See, Lockwood, a will in its most fundamental form directs the disposition of our property when we die.
Right.
It changes the title to our property. I mean, goodness gracious, we own a home. Well, who in the world owns the home when we die? Our will has got to say who owns our home when we die. So a will changes the nature of our title to our properties when we die. Now, a trust does the same. A trust also could own title to our home in Florida or our home in North Carolina and our vacation home in, you know, the Abacos. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine. A trust could own these three properties and then it directs upon our death where the title to these properties vest. And the trustee of the trust is in charge of these properties, and therefore all that is needed, which is what Wes is alluding to, is a trustee's deed. You know, we don't need to have the will registered in Florida and over in Abaco, Bahama, because it's not, the property isn't passing by the will. The property is passing according to the terms of the trust, and it's the trustee who has the authority to now divide the property according to the trust, to the two children, three children, to the grandchildren, whatever the intention happens to be. So that then begs back to what I was saying earlier. Some folks come in for estate planning and they need a trust. But we need to have a reason why they need a trust. And this would be one of the many reasons, this one right here, that, well, you know, Cecil, I have my home here in North Carolina, but guess what? I've got a home down in Florida, and I've got a home over in the Abacos. Well, a good lawyer is going to begin to think, well, maybe we need to utilize the tool called a trust.
And by doing that, also, we're avoiding that probate process. So we're avoiding the probate fees and probate costs that would be taxed by that respective state or country as well. So we're not opening an estate, an ancillary estate in Florida, as Cecil was referring to in his example. So the property passes directly under the terms of the trust by deed. So it's a very simple process, and we avoid, you know, having to, again, I use the word entangle, our administration here in North Carolina with other involvement from other states.
So I'm going to make a statement as we go to this break with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. In reality, the whole purpose of the will is to simplify the disposition of assets.
Absolutely.
And just make it simpler for all parties.
Absolutely.
Okay. Another reason why we're talking about the simple aspects of will and trusts and estate planning with Harvell and Collins. Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. We're talking about elder care here in the process off air with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Let's Talk Legal. Harvell and Collins, the right advice at the right time. With just a few moments left to go, I just want to mention also the phone number if you'd like to call them for a possible interview and conversation, 726-9050. It's a 252 area code, 726-9050. As we wrap things up, and I you said something a moment ago, Cecil, that really caught my attention because I'm cognizant of the issue of HIPAA.
Uh-huh.
So, They come to see you. You're going to hand them five things.
The health care power of attorney is like a financial power of attorney in that it grants your authority to your agent to handle things when you are unable to handle things. But the HIPAA release operates immediately. Okay, it can be just a matter of convenience, you know. Here, you know, an elder person, mm-hmm. they're doing fine, mm-hmm. they're 75, 80 years old, they're independent, right. but daughter is obviously taking them to the doctor from time to time, not maybe every time. And mother might just turn to daughter and say, gosh, daughter, will you go over to the doctor and get my such and such? Well, she's gonna need a HIPAA release in order to be able to get to her mother's records. Now, her mother is not incompetent, so we're not necessarily needing the health care power of attorney because mother's able to still make her own decisions. So the HIPAA release becomes a document that is immediately effective. There's no condition precedent to incompetency or anything like that. And, of course, it's a matter of convenience. That's the primary difference between the two.
The right advice at the right time. Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And next week we'll be more organized. My apologies.
You're great.
You're great.
We got a lot more to talk about here, but you're excellent.
That HIPAA rule?
Yes, sir.
That is big. I'll tell you about a story later on.